I don't know if I should say Patreon podcast or podcast pals. That's what I want to say, but that's not my line.
Yeah, I think you can say it. Okay. I think you can. We just won't tell John that you said it.
It's out of here. Home run, Lenny Dykstra.
Stairs rips one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. It's wacky. Wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Hello, podcast pals, and welcome to Hitten Season number 281. I am not John Stolness. I'm Liz Rocher. John is on a much-needed vacation with his family, so he's not here this week, and it's just me and Justin. Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight. How are you, Justin?
I'm pretty good. John went on a vacation, wink. It certainly had nothing to do with a full-on meltdown in which he put on a fanatic head and robbed a Wawa up in Lansbury. But yeah, I meant to say Lansdale.
I was going to say
Angela Lansbury, not involved with this situation whatsoever. In any case, I am also going to be going on vacation very soon for obvious reasons. And John Stolness, he beat me to the punch and is currently on vacation. And yes, it is much deserved. So we're going to do our best to cover all the Stolness ground that you love, that you tune in for every week with just the two of us. And I think it's going really, really well.
It is. I just realized that I didn't say I'm Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports, formerly of The Good Fight.
So really, if you're still listening, it's a miracle from the baseball gods. And we appreciate you for tuning in past the 10-second mark, frankly. So
no one tell John that we're riding this directly into the directly into the toilet.
Everyone just tell John the podcast didn't happen this week. Just listen to it quietly, hate it, and then move on with your life like we will. So I think that's a pretty solid plan for all of us in John's absence. Meanwhile, the Phillies did play four games against the Marlins, which I'm excited to talk about.
Yes, they did. We did this week's continued success during part of the first game of this series, a 3-1 loss to the Marlins.
In extras, too.
In extras, ending exactly how you would want it to. It was a 1-1 tie until the 10th, and then Hector Neris threw what could have been the final pitch of the inning and was instead launched for a 2-run home run by Starlet Castro, who still continues to just frustrate me and the Phillies forever.
And this was after the Phillies. This was the Phillies, what, fourth loss in five games, I think. They lost two to the Mets. They lost three out of four to the Rockies. I mean, it was just going into this series, it was like, all right, we're playing the Marlins. This is a beatable team. They get them for four games. This is even with a depleted roster, they're getting Gene Segura back. So this is a chance to make up some ground that they've lost and at least beat up on a weaker team. And in game one, what'd they do? Well, they lost in extra innings at home.
And they wasted the best, possibly the best Aaron Nola start of the season, if not one of, but he looked like himself. He was, it was 6 2/3 innings, 7 hits, one run, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. I think we talked about him some on Continued Success. You know, it looked like the old Aaron Nola, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
They had to cough
and,
it up.
Coughing it up was kind of a theme of this series. I mean,
oh my God.
We can laugh now, but man, that was going to be bad. In game one, definitely set what looked to be another poor tone for another disappointing series. We did. The plan was to get Gene Segura back, and that was going to be the first of many returns that we're going to see this team go back to its strong offense and stabilized defense and just. Yeah, it was going to make a lot of things right. And Gene Segura comes in his first game since hitting
Saturday.
The 10-day injured list. Comes in Saturday.
He did miss a win in game two.
Oh, was this not game? Oh, okay.
Four games,
yeah, right,
in the series, okay. Yes. Because I almost forgot one while writing all this up today. There were four whole games.
That's
in this
right.
series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's skip that. Let's talk about Jared Eichhoff. Absolutely.
Yes, I want to talk about Jared Eichhoff, who looked like the Eichhoff of 2015, 2016 when he first came up. He was so good.
Yeah.
You see, I have his start. It was classic. Seven innings, two hits.
Like innings and two hits.
You know, he looked as good as he had in years. He looked good as
I mean, this
as
is how you distinguish yourself on this pitching staff right now, because this is a staff that has not succeeded in going deep in games. This is not a staff that has succeeded at keeping runs off the board or missing bats. And here comes Jared Eichhoff stepping in for Nick Pivetta, who had a terrible four starts and got optioned down to the minor leagues. And Eichhoff steps in. He had carpal tunnel surgery in October. There was some complications in January. He got pushed back as far as development goes for this season. And then he comes into training camp, looks not the worst. And then what do you know? Four starts into the season, he gets this opportunity with Pivetta losing his spot. And he locks down his first big league win since late August 2017 with one of the most dominant starts a Phillies starter has thrown this season. And, you know, at this point in time, opponent doesn't matter. Like, yeah, the Marlins are not a good team. I don't think you even need to cite that when you're talking about this, because this was an important game for him for a lot of reasons. And for him to perform the way he did was, it's not like it, yeah, statement game, sure, but just mentally to see that he can do this again after, I mean, it's been years since we've seen this form of Eichhoff take the mound and get the Phillies a win. Almost totally, I mean, not like totally on his own, but, you know, the offense was present, not as thunderous as it has been in past games that have, like, where the offense has, like, powered them to a win. Jared Eichhoff went out and got this win. Every Philly starter is capable of giving up more than four runs, and he kept the Marlins off the board. And, you know, maybe there's not as many heavy hitters in that lineup as there are in the Nationals lineup and the Braves lineup, but it's still a team you got to suppress if you want to make three or four runs stand up. And he did that. And that says a lot. And I'm sure for him, it reminded him, you know, it seems like it's very, very tactile to come back from an injury like that and be like, okay, I know I have done this before, but it's been a while. I've had a couple of setbacks. I've come out and thrown some starts that were not good. But here I am, and now he, like, remembers how that feels to go out and be a dominant pitcher again. And I think it makes it more likely that we're going to see more starts like this from Eichhoff in the future. And that's huge for the Phillies this year.
They absolutely need it. I mean, and you're right, it's been years. I mean, this is, anything that he does is good for me. Like, anything positive after what he's been through medically is great. Like, it doesn't matter if it's against the Marlins. You know, this is a confidence builder. Like, he can go and say, I did this. I can do this against anybody if I just continue to do what I did. If I locate, if I use my pitches wisely, you know. And it was Andrew Knapp today. That was today. I'm mixing up today and 2 days ago. It was JT Realmuto. And I like what he's been doing with some of the younger starters. And I hope that the two of them continue to work well together.
And you know what? I love, it just reminds you how much you love Eichhoff, because he's a different kind of pitcher. He doesn't have, he has a fastball, but he doesn't have a dominant fastball by any stretch of the imagination. His fastball averaged lower than 90 miles an hour during his start on Friday. That's a hittable fastball, his four seamer, but he doesn't rely on that. He's obviously got I know he's synonymous with the curveball, but he's also got that slider.
A lot.
And yeah, and he does not hold back using it. He's got the most, it just seems like he's the most liberal with his arsenal of any of these Phillies pitchers. And he doesn't rely on velocity. Gabe Kapler called him a throwback, and I feel like that's so accurate. Yeah, that he's that kind of pitcher that can come out there and just, like, throw you these, like, wild lollipops. And he knows how to control it well enough that he knows how to miss bats. He knows how to keep hitters off balance, and he knows how to make it work for him. And we saw that. And that was, it's incredible to see after so long, after he's become such an injury liability, after he's become a pitcher that was so easy to write off, that he would come through and have a start like this. Yeah, it's just one start, but again, that's going to mean so much for him mentally. And if this blooms into even just a solid season for him moving forward, that is, again, huge for the Phillies, that they have a young starter who can go out there, rely on his off-speed stuff, rely on his movement and his command, and just it triggers so many swings and misses from opposing lineups. I mean, he had 6 strikeouts on 86 pitches. 57 were for strikes, and 12 were swings and misses. Like, that's a more dominant Jared Eichhoff than I think we ever thought we were going to see again. And that's, yeah. And to just spot him a couple of runs, now he's got a 2.12 ERA and 17 innings throughout this season. I mean, that's good pitching. And there's no one on this staff who's really been a good pitcher for the entire season yet. It's been a lot of ups and downs. And this early in the season, that can really shake your confidence. But Jared Eichhoff is giving us every reason to be confident in Jared Eichhoff. And that's such good news.
Yeah, I like watching him pitch because I feel like some pitchers treat pitching like a puzzle, like there's an exact right piece for every single situation you face. I feel like it's never that simple with him because he can attack hitters in different ways. It's like, it's not a puzzle. It's like I don't know what it is. I'm trying to think of a word.
It's a riddle wrapped in an enigma inside of a Rubik's Cube.
Enigma, but it's just, he's adaptable. There isn't one way to solve a problem with him. You know, it's not like, you know, every pitch hammer is a pitch nail.
That's a great point. Yes. That's adjust. A great way to put it. And in that same game, Bryce Harper hit a 2-run shot, which is, you know, always fun. That's always a nice addition to any baseball game anymore.
It was huge. It was very big. It was a very large home run.
It was a very large home run. Yes. Michael Franco had a solo shot. It was a pretty solid overall game for the Phillies. Not the kind of game that, like, I feel like we characterized this team early on as this like roaring offense with a pitching staff that was pretty vulnerable. And I think that's fair. But they've also, I feel like they've won and lost games in all the different ways that you can win or lose a baseball game. Like, they've run the full gamut at this point. And it's so early in the season, it's made it difficult to really define who this team is. And, you know, we're only a month into the season. I don't think this team really has defined itself yet. There's a lot of new guys here. There's a lot of variables. There's still injuries. Yeah, I mean, I want to say that they're still learning how to play together. I don't mean that as a chemistry way. Chemistry, it seems like this team is off the charts. Like, we're viewing it from the outside, but like, and that is huge. And I think maybe that's why I haven't melted down watching some of their worst losses of the season. It sucks to watch David Robertson walk runs in. It sucks to see guys lose time to injury. But when one of them gets on base and waves to the dugout, and they cut to the dugout, and like everybody from Zach Eflin to grizzled Jake Arrieta are like doing this goofy wave back at them, and they all have like a couple of them all have Andrew McCutchen, Bryce Harper, Michael Franco all have these individualized handshakes and everything. Like, that tells you that, all right, fundamentally though, this team is starting at a good place. And they are going to lose, you know, even this is a sport where the best teams lose 50, 60, 70 times a year. So that's inevitable. But for them to be able to come out like that, I think that's going to aid them more so in the long term, because these guys will come back and be healthy again. In fact, it's probably good that they're getting this injury stuff, hopefully, you know, assuming any team has like only one or two rashes of injury throughout the season. Yeah, I knocked on wood as I was saying that. But assuming, I feel like that's not inaccurate to say. And if the Phillies are getting theirs out of the way early, then hey, that's better than it happening in September. Because they want to be able to rely on stuff moving forward. And they haven't really, there's been so much wobbly, like, well, the offense is here last night, but it's gone tonight. Aaron Nola, you know, he looked solid, but then he came back and then he didn't look good. But the variables in place are like, all right, yeah, you lose your Nick Pivetta, but then here's Jared Eichhoff ready to come in and throw 7 innings and keep the Marlins off the board. Like, that's huge. And then, you know what, to their credit, just in case we move on without mentioning it, the bullpen also called the Marlins to no runs in that game. Edubre Ramos, Adam Morgan, and Pat Neshek. Morgan and Neshek have been, I say not a lot about this team is reliable. Those two have been pretty reliable relievers moving forward. They've been the most reliable relievers.
And Edubre Ramos managed to not cough it up. So...
That's awesome. He only pitched 2/3 of an inning, but like, whew, yeah, that he allowed a hit in that span still, but he logged a strikeout and nobody scored, which is you know, the point.
The bullpen did an excellent job on Friday. You cannot say that on Saturday. Saturday was the Phillies' 12-9 win that they almost lost. They almost lost after being ahead 10-1.
With Jake Arrieta on the mound, the one who said, I need my teammates behind me.
And there were some great catches. Everyone was on it. He was like Andrew McCutchen made a catch in I think left center field, a diving catch that was beautiful. He missed one a little bit later, but that one was perfect. And if it had not been caught, it would have been a much different game. Because that was early. So his teammates were there for him, but he pitched five innings of one run ball and then left the bases loaded, I think with no outs in the sixth. And that's how we left. And four runs scored that were charged to him.
And but you know what? With him saying, "Oh, I need my team behind me." The offense bailed out the pitching in this game. When I said you expected this team seemed to define itself early on in this way, this is the early definition of the Phillies. A team that can lose a lead, but a team that is always capable of getting it back. And that the Marlins put up four runs in the sixth and two runs in the seventh and two runs in the eighth as the lead slowly disappeared. And the Phillies managed to put on enough runs early with a four-run second and a five-run fifth. And then they scored twice in the bottom of the eighth to really to just, you know, give you some insurance runs when the lead became the absolute smallest amount it had been all day. Rhys Hoskins came in and hit a two-run shot with Sean Rodriguez on base, which – you know, it was soothing to give the bullpen a little more of a cushion because clearly they did not have their best stuff on that day.
They needed it. There's Jose Alvarez who is bad. He's bad. Those were inherited runners that he allowed score. Eniel De Los Santos, two runs on two hits. The home run, bad. Real bad. He's got a straight ERA of 18. And then there's Sir Anthony Dominguez, who allowed two runs on three hits. He's got an ERA of 5.23.
Well, he put himself in a
hole
early. He's going to be pitching out of a hole.
But it's also not good.
Pretty much this entire early part of the season, he's going to be trying.
Like,
they're
terrible.
No, and that one knocked him down a few footholds, I think, unfortunately. And that's bad for a guy we were expecting to see a lot out of this season. I think that David Robertson, Sir Anthony Dominguez, 1-2 punch at the back of the Phillies bullpen was considered to be a lot more dominant than it's looked thus far. And now the Phillies don't even have David Robertson, having lost him to injury. So it's been a rough go, certainly, and that didn't help. But
before we get to more, my question is, what do we do? What do the Phillies do about this? Because I know bullpens are cyclical, but how long do they wait? I don't know how many of these guys are really totally worth keeping around long-term on a team that wants to, it's in a race.
Yeah. And we talked about this with, on Hitting Season, about how Nick Pivetta being optioned after four bad starts was a sign to the rest of the team that, like, look, if you can't, you know, it's not that we're giving up on you. Like, Nick Pivetta, we're going to probably see again, I would imagine, at the major league level, even if it is just out of necessity later in the season. But if you're not getting the job done, then we got to go to somebody who potentially could. And in swapping out Pivetta for Eichhoff, it seems like for now, the Phillies have done that. The bullpen is a question that has not been answered yet. And I think part of the reason for that is that they don't have a lot to tap into, I think, just yet, as far as replacements. Like, I don't know how many good replacements there could be. I think you just kind of got to wait for Robertson to come back and see if any of these other guys who have not been at best reliable and at worst not good to see if they can figure it out. I don't think somebody like Alvarez is going to figure it out. He seems kind of far gone. A guy like Hector Neris is the kind of guy that Gabe Kapler seems to love relying on Hector Neris. I think he's going to keep getting chances.
Every time he does that, it makes my heart stop. But somebody, like, I die a little bit.
Somebody like Dominguez, I want to see him keep getting chances because he has looked so good. I'm not ready to dump somebody like Dominguez yet. I think it is very much a case by case basis out there. We say like the bullpen and it becomes this like amorphous blob of wobbly stats that just aren't good. But there is a difference between putting Eniel De Los Santos out there and Sir Anthony Dominguez out there. Expectations are a little higher for Dominguez, who was dominant for so much of last year and could really be a key piece of this bullpen moving forward. De Los Santos, I mean, he made a start for the Phillies last year. He didn't log a ton of innings for them. I don't know how much of a role the Phillies envision him having moving forward. And this is a bullpen that doesn't really have all of its roles defined yet, I don't think. And I'd be curious to see where they see him fitting in, because he's, you know, he's another right-hander who is young and could develop a bit, but at the same time, how long are you willing to wait in this season? A guy like Dominguez, it makes sense to wait because you've seen what he can do when he gets his chance. Somebody like De Los Santos, you know, I don't mean to pick on him specifically. Let's just say Alvarez, somebody who I feel like has probably much less of a chance to look good, because he just has not, he hasn't shown you anything to latch on to. He hasn't shown you anything to make you think, all right, this guy's worth keeping around. But like I said, I don't know, Liz, I don't know who you go to at AAA to make this team better. I think it's just waiting to see if any of these guys stabilize and hope that the guys you lose to injury come back and are able to produce at the level they were expected to. Then again, one of those guys is Tommy Hunter, but I don't think anybody's waiting for him to come. He's like a 60-day deal at this point, right? He's pretty far gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm also trying to figure out how bad do things have to get before they
How bad do you think they are now?
I think, and here's the thing, it's painful every time it happens and they come back and they win a few. Like, they have to, it has to affect them a lot, and it's continuing to affect mm-hmm. them, but their offense has been bailing them out. Like, I'm just trying to figure out when they, if they have to hit a point where things are very bad, which means things have to get worse, or if, you know, in a couple of, you know, in a week or so, they're going to do something preventative, like sign Craig Kimbrell on a 1-year contract.
When you look at this bullpen now, and it's just like, oof, okay, it's not the best. Look at it again in a couple of weeks when David Robertson's back in there, when Victor Arano's back in there, when some of these weaker guys are swapped out for those guys, and assume that, like, all right, let's imagine that they're all producing at a high level, and things are like relatively okay. It's still probably not the best bullpen in the NL East. And that's why I think Craig Kimbrell, he could be narratively at this point, he's sort of the difference maker in this division, which is one of the envisioned to be one of the tightest races in baseball divisionally. And none of these teams have a bullpen that they can really rely on right now. I mean, Edwin Diaz, when he was pitching against the Phillies, looked as advertised for the Mets. But the Nationals bullpen has been a disaster this year. The Braves haven't been able to rely 100% on their relievers. I mean, part of that is just the nature of the bullpen and that it is so volatile. But Craig Kimbrell, it just makes every time one of these teams goes out and has a game lost late in the game, or watches their relief pitching give up more runs and just blow a lead. I think somebody put up a list from the past weekend, I think, of how each one of the NL East teams had a game where they gave up a startling number of runs late, and any one of them could use a pitcher like Craig Kimbrell. That being said, you know, is Kimbrell going to show up and be as dominant as we're all imagining, or is he going to be like, okay, let me just like warm up here for a second, let me take a couple of weeks to get into Craig Kimbrell shape? That's not going to be super helpful, at least from the outset. But it does make it more comical that he's still available and all of these teams could use him, and he could be the difference in whether or not they win in this very tight divisional race. So, yeah, it's crazy that he's still available. And the Phillies, they have to be doing more than their due diligence at this point, you would think.
They have to be thinking about it. They have to be, because they're looking at games now, and they still have a game and a half lead in the NL East. But they have to be looking at the games that they've lost because of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, like, even those games early on with Robertson, who was supposed to be the stopper, mm-hmm. you know, like, you look at that and you wonder, the offense is doing a lot. The offense is doing almost everything it can in some cases to, you know, to prevent the Phillies from handing over a defeat, mm-hmm. you know, to another team, handing another team a victory. I look at those games and wonder, it could already be, you know, protection against what we've been seeing, against, you know, giving up games late when the offense is kind of stymied by injuries and other crap.
And again, they held the rotation to a standard that you would expect them to hold the bullpen for. And at AAA, I'm not sure who they go to. So that just makes Craig Kimbrell kind of the obvious choice if you're looking to improve your bullpen and you're the Phillies. So, yeah, it's got to be a hot topic for them.
I mean, and I don't want to think about what would have happened if Rhys Hoskins hadn't hit that mm-hmm. home run last night, that two-run home run in the eighth that took the Phillies a three-run lead, which was they only had an inning left, so they were going to be able to maintain it. Thank God they did, but if it hadn't been for that, it would have been a lot closer, and you wonder how things would have played out differently. If they were so afraid of the game being tied, because it's, you approach a game a lot differently when there's a, a one-run lead as opposed to a three-run lead.
Well, the bullpen isn't the only thing that is worse. At some point, this season, you're just kind of worried, are the Phillies just going to run out of players? And I don't even mean like Phillies players. I mean players on earth, because they are pretty far down in their depth chart. And no one is signifying the ludicrous chaos of baseball and how luck factors into it than Gene Segura this year, who has already in
I was just going to say, let's make sure we talk about Gene Segura. Already what happened to him on Saturday.
In his career, Segura has had some of the most warped head injuries happen to him. He's the one who got clocked by, I think, Ryan Braun, who was just swinging his bat to warm up when he was on the Brewers and smacked Segura in the head.
Oh my God.
He missed time for that. Yes. And here's this poor guy who comes back, key part of the Phillies offense, number two hitter, extra base hitter, guy who's here to knock in runs, first day back from the 10-day injured list from, I believe, a hamstring strain. And he comes back. Yeah. And what do you know? Was it his first at bat? He gets chunked in the helmet by a pitch. And he posted a picture of his helmet on his Instagram that showed just how much. I mean, there is a decent sized piece of that helmet missing right on the left side of the brim that is gone. That you're just like, yeah, that would have been his skull if he hadn't have been wearing that helmet. He got checked out. He doesn't have a concussion. He did leave that game, I believe. And I don't think they expected much long term damage to be incurred from that. But man, yeah, that was like, what do we got to do here? Like, what do we got to do? Send our batters to the plate in protective bubbles, and just hope that that's enough to stem off the bad baseball luck the Phillies have had so far this season. Some other teams have had worse luck, but in a race that, like, I was just characterizing it as possibly determined by one elite pitcher joining one team's bullpen, losing this many key players is really tough for the Phillies. And I'm sure they would have had a more dominant beginning of the season if they had had Gene Segura for the games that he missed. Odubel Herrera in center field instead of Aaron Altair. Here's something I want to mention. Roman Quinn. So he comes in and he's the all other center field alternative once Odubel Herrera is unavailable and Aaron Altair is not great. Are you still in on Roman Quinn or are you out? Because I think I'm finally ready to say I might be out on Roman Quinn. He's an exciting player and I want to see him do well. But at this point, you just can't argue with history. Like I'm not calling him soft, but he gets hurt a lot. He gets hurt so much.
Oh, no.
And you need players to be on the field to be effective. And, he's fast. He got characterized as faster than Billy Hamilton when he was coming up through the farm system. And that was very exciting. But if you can't stay on the field, then you're not going to be able to help this team. Like Aaron Altair is one case where he doesn't look like anymore that he's able to hit major league pitching. And that sucks. But Quinn can't even stay in the batter's box anymore. And it just makes you wonder, like, all right, it makes you wonder what the Phillies are going to do, because if the depth chart is Odubel Herrera and he's not available and the alternatives are guys who can't keep up with major league pitching and can't keep themselves healthy, then what do we do here? Like, who's the center fielder in this situation? Bryce Harper? Yeah.
I mean, it's Andrew McCutchen who played center. I mean, they'd been hoping to give McCutchen a couple of days off this weekend against an easy team like the Marlins, but it just didn't work out that way. They weren't able to do it, and he played center. And I mean, he looked fine out there. He's Andrew McCutchen. He's still looking good. But I don't know. I've always liked Roman Quinn. I don't know if I had as such an emotional attachment or such strong feelings about him. I mean, if he stays, he stays. If he goes, he goes. If he goes, I'll be sad. But, like, he's not soft, but he's injury prone. I mean, and I don't know what that as a phrase means beyond just that, beyond just history. I don't think it has any bearing on anything else. But, he's just he just happens to get injured a lot. I don't think it's his conditioning or anything, because he's aware. You know, there was an article about him in The Athletic last year, I believe. I think it was Megan Montemaro who wrote it. And it was, you know, it talked about him and his history and how his wife, I think, is the physician's assistant, and really wants to make sure that there is, you know, an income besides baseball coming into their household. And I want him to succeed because of that, because this has to be tough for him and for them as a family. You know, baseball, unless you're like someone who's a successful major leaguer, it's not easy. And even when you are a successful major leaguer, it's not easy because you're gone for half the year. You know, you're gone for a long time. And so I want him to succeed because it's hard to be where, you know, I feel like it hasn't been an easy road for him. But I also, I don't know. But here's what I think about him and the Phillies. I think that they're willing to keep doing this for a while because they like him. They've been doing it thus far. They've been able to cover what, you know, when he's gone, they've been able to cover it with other people. And when he comes back, he's been welcomed back with open arms. I'm glad. I'm glad that the Phillies continue to see value in him and what he can contribute. I'm glad that they've continued to be patient with him. And they've, you know, I think Megan talked to people in the organization who are aware. They're like, yeah, he just, you know, he gets injured a lot. You know, we're here for him. Our job is to help him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes me happy. You know, I feel like that's the least they can do, but it still makes me glad to hear it. So I still hope that he'll be able to be a productive backup, because that's what he is.
Yeah.
But
at this point, you know,
I don't know.
I wish, you know, it could be more than just like, okay, if they do keep him, what a great asset to have for like a late inning base pinch runner, like kind of situation. Sure. But man, it's just tough to believe that he's going to be able to have any sort of long-term impact for all of the reasons that are obvious. He's just become way too synonymous with missed time due to injury. And speaking of which, I asked Matt Winkleman this week how the Phillies' middle infield was pretty drained. And I believe it was after Gene Segura came back, got hit in the helmet, and it was just like, wow, this middle infield might be staying pretty depleted for the time being. It turns out that's not the case, but you know, obviously we were all thinking it. And I asked him, like, look, if Sean Rodriguez, who no one after spring training wanted to imagine like the situation that would lead to him being on the major league roster, but he got promoted to the major league roster from AAA as a quad A fill-in, did hit a home run in the Phillies' loss against the Marlins in this series. But you know, nobody, he was not the ideal candidate, but it, by through necessity, was forced onto the roster. Cesar Hernandez has been struggling all season at the plate and defensively and base running in some cases. So I asked him, like, if those two guys collided and had to be carted off the field, like, what happens next with Kingery out, with Segura out? I mean, like, who's next up in the middle infield? And he was like, well, you know, there's Andrew Romine still in AAA, a guy who hit .210 in 72 games for the Mariners last year, who's 32 years old. And then he said,
he won the game for the Iron Pigs today.
Yeah. And like, salute, but obviously again, that's
it was his only hit in five.
It's an indicator that you're pretty far down the depth chart. And I was just curious, like, I wanted to rip up the floorboards and see what was wriggling underneath in the Phillies middle. So he said, there's Andrew Romine. And he goes, but honestly, at that point, we would be pretty close to seeing shortstop Michael Franco. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at right now with the Phillies and injuries.
I mean, they'll have to go outside. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll just have to sign someone from outside the organization. There's really, you know, or make a trade for cash or something, because, yeah, I don't want to know what happens if something else happens. I don't want to know. I do want to say, because I mentioned the Iron Pigs, Nick Pivetta started today. It was a 6-5, not an extra, a walk-off win by the Iron Pigs. But Nick Pivetta started 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 14 strikeouts.
See, we'll see him again.
We will see him again. Like, all of that is encouraging, that was 14 strikeouts, because I was just reading the line because I'd looked at it before, but I had somehow missed the 14 strikeouts and I almost choked on my tongue. 14 strikeouts.
I mean, yeah, this is a guy I think we'll definitely see again. I'm not saying that we'll definitely see the version of him we had figured we would see this season, but we will see him on the Major League Phillies roster again this season. It's a long year, and already this team has proven that starting pitching is a commodity. So Yeah, I have the utmost faith that Nick Pivetta will be back in a Phillies uniform before the end of the regular season.
And that brings us to today's game. But I think we have to take a break.
Take a breather before we get to that nine innings.
And we're back here on Hittin' Season, and we're going to talk about Sunday's game. Sunday's win, the Phillies 5-1 win against the Marlins, wrapping up the series. They win the series 3-1, which is excellent. But the big news from today was Zach Eflin.
Man.
Zach Eflin redeeming my faith in him, my long-held faith in him and how much I love him. He pitched a complete game win today, all nine innings, 107 pitches. And I've lost the window and I don't remember how many hits there were. I think there were seven hits. He looked really great. I was so happy. It was like there hasn't been a complete game since Ben Lively pitched a complete game loss against the Nationals in September of 2017. And, which I remember that game. I mean,
Zach
Eflin was
the one who came out his rookie season, had the worst start of any major league starter in history. But then he threw two complete games, shutouts, I believe, as a rookie starter. So he's somebody who knows how to go all nine innings early on in his career. We've seen that he's definitely got that sort of streak in him. He's not somebody who necessarily is going to falter from fatigue. Yeah, he threw two complete games. One of which was a shutout when he was 22 years old in 2016. And like you said, it was the Phillies' first shutout, nine inning complete game since 2017. So yeah, it was quite a statement. And again, this series, it looked like it was not going to be the resurgence, like the four games of the Phillies kind of like relearning who they are and gaining some ground again after that initial loss. But we actually learned, we actually saw some really important signs from this team, from Jared Eichhoff in his seven inning start, from the offense, keeping Jake Arrieta from that game getting blown by continuing to score, and then Zach Eflin making this start. I mean, this was really big to see this again. Like I can't say enough how much the Phillies need to see strong starting pitching performances right now, because it is not necessarily a strong point. And it got them back over 500 after this series, after winning 3-4 against Marlins at Citizens Bank Park. Like that's just a number, and it's very early in the season. They've only played 25 games, but you know, they were having a bad stretch there, and that they sunk to 500 was really, you know, that's never something you want to see from a team that opened the season sweeping one of their division rivals that's supposed to be really good this year too. So yeah, Eflin coming out and making that start was, I don't know, which one's more exciting to you, Eichhoff or Eflin? Stupid question. It's definitely Eichhoff. Stupid question.
Oh God.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to, I mean, it is because of all that he's overcome. Absolutely. Because of that. But I mean, this is the Eflin that I've always known was inside, you know, that I was so impressed with him his first season. And you don't pitch like that with some consistency without, you know, you can lose it, but he's so young. I didn't, you know, he hadn't lost it. It was still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he just has to learn how to repeat it, you know, but Jared Eichhoff, I can't imagine how good that felt. I can't imagine how good that, I mean, on top, you know, first he earns a spot with a relief appearance. And Nick Pivetta is sent down. Like, you know, I'm not saying he's reveling in, you know, his teammate being sent down, but that had to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
then
a great
he goes
way to
out
go
and
out
he has a
on
second
series,
straight strong
the
start.
Phillies are in the middle of that, of a crazy stretch where they play.
I'm so happy for
18 games.
I'm so happy for him.
With no break. And yeah. They finally have an off day tomorrow, and then they're playing the Tigers, another team that they should really be able to beat before another tough three-game set with the Nationals.
They have an off day tomorrow
on
Monday.
So this is they really had to take advantage of this series, and they weren't going to be able to take advantage of it, clearly, as they learned early on, without seeing some developments as far as the talent level goes with the starting rotation. And Zach Eflin, you know, that was a big part of that. And you know what? We said Jared Eichhoff had to come back from a lot of stuff, and he definitely has had to overcome a lot more health-wise than Zach Eflin. But Zach Eflin had like double knee surgery. So him being
he
able
did.
To...
Dude, I can't believe I forgot about that. Him, oh, I feel so bad.
Him starting, making this start is also an overcoming of a health challenge in and of itself. So yeah, I think, man, it's just nice to be able to imagine... Look, everything has that caveat of that it's early, but it's nice. Like I said, with some of the guys in the bullpen, you haven't seen something to latch on to make you think, all right, this bullpen or this pitcher is capable of success. And now we've seen Jared Eichhoff and Zach Eflin, two of the guys from the swirling maelstrom of the back of the Phillies rotation from this collection of young players who few of them have shown over the past few years that they deserve and have earned a regular spot in the rotation. It's always a question mark coming out of the spring, and now we have two guys who have shown us in 2019 that they are capable of pitching deep into a Major League Baseball game, of suppressing a lineup, of missing bats, and of keeping runs off the scoreboard. I mean, that's big. That's real big. And if that can just be the thing that we latch onto with these two guys as they round out their first month of the season, yeah, that's a great way to end what has been a roller coaster of a first month of the 2019 Phillies season. It's been a lot.
Yeah. They righted the ship. You know, you said the Phillies had lost five of their last six, which they had. And, you know, they needed strong pitching performances, mm-hmm. and they got three of them. One of them did not end up in a win, which was not Aaron Nola's fault, but they got three solid pitching performances. And if they can get guys to perform like that, I want to see how they do in May. I want to see how Aaron Nola looks in a couple of days, because he's starting Wednesday against Tyson Ross, I believe is who it is. No, Spencer Turnbull, who is actually a good pitcher on the Tigers. Tyson Ross is a bad pitcher on the Tigers. And he'll be facing Vince Velasquez, who also had a very
true.
Encouraging start
We're seeing
start
some
recently.
Real, and not just signs of life, but signs of dominant life from this rotation. And you don't want to get too excited too quickly, but it's hard not to do watching Zach Eflin pitch out of trouble today, get the double play he needed in one case in the eighth inning. He shut down the Marlins 1-2-3 in the ninth to get the to get the complete game. And he also, you know, he wasn't like out there throwing like a Roy Halladay or a Cliff Lee kind of flame throwing 20 strikeout start, but you know, he was hitting his locations. His pitches had movement when he needed them. He even used his fastball, in one case to just blow away a hitter. You know, he was hitting like 95 miles an hour with his heater. So that's not obviously the highest velocity on the Phillies, but it's certainly not a Jared Eichhoff fastball. So he got what he needed, and the Phillies may have what they need with the rotation moving forward, which is, you know, that's an important component to this team's success moving forward. So now that we're at the end of April, I think you're going to see a lot more people saying, reasonably, okay, we have a sample size on which we can judge the Phillies. I think, you know, I mentioned that caveat of the early season earlier. I think that is gone after April. Yeah, there's still plenty of time for guys to develop in May and, you know, moving forward, but I think now we have a decent section of Phillies games to try and understand who this team is. And this was, like you said, a great way to close out the first month of the season. But, you know, people are going to be talking, people are going to be reviewing how this team looked in April. It wasn't always good, but it was promising to see them close it out this way.
Yeah. And speaking of, why don't we give our grades? We're just about the end of April. We got two more days left in April. I'm not sure if there's anything that could happen there that would really change too much of what I have to say, of what, you know, any of us that really think about the team. So can you give our overall grades for April?
That sounds good. Why don't you start?
Where to improve? I will start. I'm going to say overall, I think they get like a B-.
I knew you were going to say exactly what I was going to say.
Damn it.
I'll change mine.
No, I think it's fine that we agree, because I mean, I think you're right. I think you're correct. You know, I think that, you know, maybe if you averaged all of my individual grades out, it wouldn't come this way. The bullpen really drags it all down. It drags down the average. I give the bullpen like a solid, maybe D+. just because I look at the ERAs of the starters and they all look pretty decent. And I remember, you know, there've been some bad starts, but largely good. And I realize, oh no, it's the bullpen that's been giving, you know, some of these games away and spoiling some decent starts. So the bullpen gets a D. I think, you know, everyone else is sort of milling. The defense is certainly much improved from last year, even in just a month.
You know,
I'm going to say B minus.
Now that we're talking about it, I'm actually going to bump it up to a B plus. B minus, I was going to stick with, because just on that grading system, B makes me think, oh, that's good. And minus makes me think, oh, that's bad. And that's kind of how I view this team. It's just like I feel good and bad about them simultaneously. And that's what the B minus grade makes me feel. I feel like it's a decent reflection of that. But I'll say B plus because we got to factor in that the Phillies have had some bad injury luck, a significant amount of bad injury luck early on. This team looked unstoppable early in the season. They were started 4-0, I believe. And they didn't look like they were firing on all cylinders, but they just looked unstoppable because of how strong the lineup was. One of this team's weakness is, and will continue to be until adjustments are made, depth. And you can fault them for that because they chose to go with the short bench. They chose to go with the bigger bullpen. And it came back to bite them immediately. No one could have predicted that, but like, it happened immediately. And we're looking at a depth chart with Phil Gosselin getting starts and Sean Rodriguez on the major league roster. You know, great guys, not somebody you necessarily want to see on the starting.
Did you hear that Phil Gosselin, he went to Malvern Prep? They only mentioned that on every single episode.
They love it. He just give him that extra local guy strength. And look, he had a couple of hits for the Phillies when he came up. So, you know, you don't want to hold it against him. But at the same time, this team has looked absolutely tapped out in some cases. And like Jake Arrieta characterized it, he's like, look, this team has looked flat. This team I have not felt like they were behind me. And as a veteran, I think he's entitled to say that. He said it in a completely respectful yet straightforward and direct way. And this is a team that should be called out on occasion. He did exactly what Gabe Kapler said he was going to be doing moving forward, was holding people accountable and not being afraid to do so in public. And he managed to do it in a way that wasn't disrespectful, in a way that didn't make me think the locker room was unraveling. He did it in a way that if you're a young player in that locker room, you're thinking like, yeah, you know what? I didn't come through today. I didn't do my part. And this was following a start in which he had pulled his weight, but you know, the rest of the team hadn't. And that's the kind of thing that's going to keep a young team motivated and really, you know, like, okay, yeah, you're right. Their chemistry, like I said, is good. So I think they're going to hear something like that and not react negatively to it. But at the same time, they have looked fully capable of losing, of being flat. They have looked fully capable of losing in the same ways that the 2018 Phillies did. And that is not a team I think they want to draw too many comparisons to, because they did a lot of work to not be that team anymore. With the front office, I mean, did a lot of work to not be the 2018 Phillies anymore. So they don't want to lose games because they look flat. They want to, if there's a problem, they want to fix it. They want to, they want to have everything they need to beat all their NL East rivals to rise to the top of this scrum that's going to be going on all year. So I think not having the depth to overcome an injury epidemic is going to harm them now and probably moving forward at least a couple of times. However, when this team is at its best, it does look unstoppable. If they have and moving forward, if they can rely on deep starts on a regular basis from Jared Eichhoff, from Zach Eflin, if Vince Velasquez starts looking as good as he did in his last start, if Aaron Nola continues the momentum of his first good start of the season, and if Jake Arrieta can like keep it together from start to start, you know, he hasn't always looked good at it. You know, he talked about his team looking flat behind him in his most recent start. He's the one who looked flat and his team came through for him. So this team's weaknesses change like from day to day, but yeah, I'm going to say B+. Just to differ from B minus, I think that they set themselves up with not much depth to overcome any sort of bad luck. But they did. You can't fault them for going through as much bad luck as they've had early in the season. So I'll say B+ because I'm still excited about this team. And when it is at full strength, it is, I think, probably the best team in the NL East. The problem is just staying at full strength for 162 games, which they've shown how hard it is to stay at full strength for 30 games. So, yeah, I'll say B+ because I'm still with them at finishing the month strong. I'm still as excited about this team as I was on opening day. It's just we're relearning the rigors and risks of playing a full baseball season and how quickly it can just chew up your best players.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you've said. I think you could give them a grade anywhere in the B area and still be correct, because there's a lot of positives about this team. There are also a number of concerning negatives, but they've shown a lot of positive things over the last, you know, handful of games. You know, the fact that, you know, I think they were just at or under 500 with Jean Segura out, which I know is, you know, he's out and a whole bunch of other players, but I sort of look at him coming back as being, you know, hopefully it's a point of change, a point of better, better scores, better results going forward.
And I keep criticizing their depth, but by keeping Scott Kingery and having him play a role on this team and watching him have the success he had early in the season, like, he did give them a little depth in the middle infield, assuming Cesar Hernandez starts looking a little better than he's looked this season. Like, that's three really solid looking, in some cases versatile, middle infielders. So there is like a teeny bit of depth. The Phillies just happen to lose, you know, all of it at certain points during the season. And getting him back, yes, I hope it makes it easier to envision this lineup with Jean Segura in it, with Scott Kingery looking as good as he looked, and then the rest of this lineup just doing what it's supposed to do. I mean, honestly, that Hoskins, Harper, Real, Muto block in the lineup, which has been healthy for most of this time, should be enough to like intimidate opposing starting pitching. But the thing is, they're surrounded by other great hitters. And when Odubel Herrera is back, Jean Segura is back, Scott Kingery's back, I mean, with everybody, with the gang all there, this is a lineup that's not to be trifled with. So I feel like the pitching getting more figured out at the end of April is a great sign. And we could see a pretty dominant May moving forward.
I certainly hope that's true. And I think that's probably about it for us here at Hittin' Season. Do you have any final thoughts there?
Just get well soon, everybody. I know we lost Kingery for a couple of weeks, but if Jean Segura coming back and, you know, surviving his first brush with death was any indication, though, like I said, I look forward to this team being at full strength again, and I think we can look forward to a fun summer.
It's been a while since we've gotten an update on Odubel Herrera, but we heard this weekend that Scott Kingery should be back in about 2 weeks, which is not great. But it could be worse. It could be the no update that we've gotten from about Odubel Herrera. So
maybe they just lost him.
He could just be gone. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Liz Rocher. You can follow Justin at Justin_Clue. And you can follow John Stolness on Twitter at John Stolness, I believe. He's only said this to us 8 million times. I thought to myself, I'll be able to get through this. I know how to do this. No.
Sounds about right.
John Stolness, Jay Stolness. I almost said Felsky Files. That's not what he is.
I do
that. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you all so much. We will see you again later this week on Hittin' Season.